It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And let's do that. Let's Talk Legal, and we want to welcome on the line Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And Wes Collins back in the studio, tanned and rested. Good to see you.
I'm not that rested after coming back yesterday.
Oh, that's right. Well, that's what, you know.
My desk was pretty much in disarray.
The work was there when you got back. You know, yeah, gentlemen, sure. From each week we talk, you make the complex very simple. And you like to demystify some of the myths that are out there as far as the legal world goes. And one of the things people probably don't understand too well is attorney fees. You know, I guess right out of the box, people think, oh, I can't afford that. They're too expensive. But what are, and that's the topic of discussion for today, attorney fees and demystifying the aforementioned subject, attorney fees.
Right.
What are attorney fees? Are there different attorney fees for different cases?
It's more like, how is the attorney fee structured? What are the terms of the payment to be made by the client to the law firm? And so, for instance, maybe the lawyer, there are several different terms that can be talked about that can then become the provision in the legal agreement services contract. Attorney fees and the terms of the payment of the attorney fees should be reduced to writing. You should ask your lawyer to do that. We do that routinely at Harvell and Collins. Each and every file, without exception, has a legal services contract. It can be very simple, but it needs to be placed, the terms need to be placed in writing. For instance, just right out of the gate, very simple, you know, a set fee. A set fee is just simply where the lawyer says, I will gladly prepare this deed for you. I will gladly prepare this simple will for you. Your simple will, just you, after consultation with the lawyer, your simple will is $250. Your power of attorney, you know, is $95. So in other words, very specific fee for a very specific thing, and it's called a set fee. This is one arrangement and that a client can have with a lawyer, and it's a good one to kind of start with for our listeners to be able to begin to understand exactly kind of what we're talking about today. All of the fees, of course, are paid in the form of money, of course, either check, credit card, cash, whatever the client chooses, however the client chooses to make the payment. But then, of course, there are various types of arrangements that can be made between the law firm and the client. And one of them, of course, right out of the gate, an easy one to talk about, is the set fee.
Set fee is what it sounds like. It's a set fee.
Right.
It's not
so
a variable.
So when will the attorney, and you know, there's something that's kind of on my mind that I do want to mention here at the beginning of the program that we're going to talk about next week. This is off the topic, but I want to say it quickly. Is that you know, folks who have hurricane claims from Florence? We're going to talk about that next week. The statute of limitations on those is getting really close. Mm-hmm. We're talking early to mid September as far as the date of the storm. And in the event that folks, you know, are in appraisal in their cases or they haven't resolved their situation with regard to their insurance company, we just can't stress enough that you can't wait beyond that date, because then your rights are going to be fixed and you're not going to have much of a remedy. But that's just a mention. We'll come back to that okay. Next week. So let's make a note that needs to be next Tuesday's topic for people, because it's a really important, I think, public message for people to understand. Back to attorney's fees. So when is a lawyer going to want to set a flat fee, you know, on a case? As Cecil indicated, it's normally because there's a very defined scope of work. Now, if you're getting into litigation, that's not defined normally, because you don't know how long it's going to last. You don't know, frankly, how hard the other lawyer or the court is going to make you work. You don't know how many dispositive motions there are going to be, how many depositions there are going to be, how much written discovery there's going to be. So normally an attorney is not going to want to handle litigation of any size, maybe a small claims case, but any litigation of any size, district court and up, on a flat fee basis, because that may be, you know, a problem, because the flat fee may not cover the scope of work within mm-hmm. reason. So normally we're talking about things like preparation of a trust costs this much, preparation of a deed costs this much, your entire estate plan, being your will, trust, power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, living will, HIPAA authorization, this is what that cost. So, and the way that normally works in our office is there's the initial consultation with the attorney so that the attorney can understand what's needed and advise us to what's needed. And then that flat or set fee can be set, can be established. So then the client is fully informed and can decide whether he or she wants the client to then proceed forward. So flat fee, very easy to understand. Right. And I hope I've explained it well enough so that, you know, the listeners would understand when that normally applies in an attorney-client relationship.
Well, that makes sense. And Cecil, I think you would agree, too, that makes sense. The people hear the term billable hours, or when an attorney calls you on the phone, am I being billed for this? So that's when you get more into litigation in the courts. When a client sits down with you, knowing that it's going to go through that process, do you set a dollar amount per hour that you're going to be billing the client?
So you've moved, Mike, to the type of fee known as an hourly rate fee.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we do a lot of hourly rate, have a lot of hourly rate fee arrangements with clients. And absolutely, each lawyer in the practice has an hourly rate, as does the paraprofessionals or the paralegals, who, for instance, are $95 an hour. At Harvell and Collins and at any law firm, there's the older buck on the street, if you will, and that's me at Harvell and Collins, and I'm $350 an hour. Wes is, Wes, I believe you're now $300 or $325.
$300.
Mm-hmm. And then Andrew Foster and Sam Morris, the younger associates at our office, are in the
Sam and Andrew, right. 245.
Yeah, they're in the mid 200s, and then the paralegals are down at 95. And so what Wes and I are going to try to do on an hourly rate file, obviously, is to have the lion's share of the work, if possible, done at the lower rates. And then we of course, as the partners, will come in and dot the I's and cross the T's. But the bottom line is that, yes, there absolutely are a lot of files that just simply have to be billed out on an hourly rate. And I might add, they are not always just litigation files. I myself have quite a few files on an hourly rate, such as a probate file, a settlement of an estate file. How many hours is it going to take to settle an estate? How much time is it going to take? And so those files can be billed out on an hourly rate. Sometimes folks are just in with a dilemma relative to a sibling, or an issue in the family concerning an estate. They have questions about documentation that was done maybe at another lawyer's office relative to the settlement of their estate, and they want us to inquire about that. There just are any number of services that we render on an hourly rate. And so the fee arrangement would be just that the law firm will begin work on the file, and that we will be beginning at an hourly rate. Now, what gets confusing is that famous word out there called, quote, retainer.
Mm-hmm.
And what in the world does that mean? What does the word retainer mean? Well, at our law firm, the word retainer means a deposit in the file that will then be billed against, Mike, at the applicable hour rates. So you're paying in advance X number of hours. So, for instance, if I think that only I am going to be able to do work on a file, that's rare but possible, you know, and I'm going to have 10 hours of time, that's at $350 an hour, that's $3,500, and therefore the deposit might be, and or retainer might be, $3,500, but the client has in effect bought the 10 hours of time that then the $3,500 is going to be billed against.
Well, that makes sense. And I was wondering about that, too, because we've talked about certain cases that extend months, sometimes years. Certainly, you don't wait till the case is finalized before you submit the bill to the client. Are they kind of like you have the retainer, so you're chipping away at that. But if it goes beyond that, do they get like a monthly statement, a quarterly statement? How does that work?
Absolutely. They get a monthly statement at that point, and those go out at our office once a month.
Mm-hmm.
All those issues are handled by our billing clerk. And that's around the 20th, is when we do that. So, yes, and we keep all of our time on a software program called Amicus so that, you know, when Mr. Jones or whoever it may be calls and I'm talking with him on the phone, we're dealing with his case, then I can pull his file up by pushing the button and then keeping my accurate time on that billing program.
Because yeah, that can get messy if you just don't do it. If you just do it manually, that can get a little sloppy.
Well, that, no doubt, and you can't do that. And then the client deserves the right to be able to see that, basically invoice with all of the time entries on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very easy to do if you have a computer program
sure.
that keeps all the work and the amount of time you spent.
Sure. So. We've all seen the movie The Firm and how you can get in trouble
with
billing. Let's take our break here. We're talking with Harvell and Collins. You can call the show today now and get free legal advice. Call 252-222-4848. If you wish to reach Cecil or Wes after the show, call the firm 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're demystifying attorney fees. This is a great conversation, guys. Really laying bare and being very transparent with the cost to get great legal counsel. And we'll continue the conversation with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins.
So we talked about the flat fee, and we've talked a little bit about the hourly rate and how that works. The next and probably the last way that you deal with attorney's fees would be a contingency
mm-hmm.
fee.
We hear that a lot.
Right. And contingency typically is going to be a 1/3 of whatever the recovery may be. That oftentimes goes up if it's a novel type case, and it oftentimes goes up in the event, let's say, the case has gone so far that it is actually at trial. So that means that we weren't able to settle it. So there's a lot more work that has been done once we've gotten to trial, so that may go up some. But what that is just a percentage of the recovery. Now, normally when you're talking about a contingency case, these are cases where typically there would be some type of payment source.
Mm-hmm.
Like a personal injury case.
Like that a malpractice suit?
It could be a malpractice suit. It could be... a motor vehicle accident.
Wrongful death.
Right. It could be, as I mentioned before, these hurricane claims.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we will agree to do those on a contingency basis. Those are the type of cases that you would imagine the attorney would need to study very closely the elements of the case and the facts to make a determination as to whether it's in the attorney's best interest to handle it on a contingency basis. Because obviously the attorney doesn't want to do 100 hours of work and get a third of zero.
Zero. Yeah.
So a third of zero is zero.
Mm-hmm.
So those are particular type cases. And it's not that frequent, but sometimes I do have clients ask me to handle a case on a contingency basis. And that I otherwise would not do, that would otherwise be hourly. And sometimes I agree to do that after study on the case to help the client out and help their situation out and maybe even stick my neck out there a little bit to help
mm-hmm.
people, you know, in those type situations if they just can't afford the normal hourly type of a case. But normally when I do that, obviously there's initially some evaluation of that case on an hourly rate to try to work it up to help the client to see where we are with it first before I can maybe proceed forward on a contingency. So
if it has standing, if it has legs, that
if there's a statute of limitations problem, if there is some issue in the medical records, for example, that's going to create a problem. If there's just any type of issue that may come up that I don't know about from the beginning and couldn't know about from the beginning, a lot of times there's an initial, okay, step one analysis. Let's make sure we're both on the same page with regard to the strength of your case, whether there are defenses against your case, and you need to pay me hourly to do that. And once I've done that, then we could potentially move on to a contingency arrangement. Maybe, maybe not. Have to do the study first. Right.
You know, gentlemen, a lot of times we hear these terms and we hear them in the movies or the books we read, and contingency fee is one that comes up. It's not on the list we were talking about today, but pro bono. What is that? What is a pro bono case or fee?
A pro bono case, Mike, is just simply where the law firm is agreeing to represent the client without any particular attorney fee. In other words, to give to the benefit of the community, or, you know, the charity or whatever the client might be, the benefit of the lawyer's time and effort and energies and the law firm's time and effort and energies, but without a bill. And that usually is in the context of community work, 501c3 work. We've done work for years and years and years for Habitat for Humanity, the law firm of Harvell and Collins, and we have never charged for those services for all those very, very many years, because, of course, it's a wonderful organization known as Habitat for Humanity, and we're very proud of the fact that we've been involved with that. There are other organizations such as that as well, where that's usually the arrangement where a pro bono fee would be the agreement. One thing that I'd also like to talk about real quickly, Mike, that gets very confusing for clients is the difference between the attorney fee and the cost of a file. Let's keep in mind that every time Wes and I are involved in a file, there are many times costs. Now, even right now, people are wondering what in the world I'm talking about. I'm talking about a survey, an expert witness fee, a recording fee, a deposition cost arrangement. The list just kind of is endless on what the cost in a file can be. And of course, the professional rules of conduct are very clear that a lawyer and a law firm should not be responsible and should not be responsible for the cost in a file. Because let's talk about it a minute, Mike. If we're responsible for the cost, the expert witnesses, the survey work, whatever the case might be in the file, the cost of the many depositions that Wes is dealing with in his litigation files, and all of a sudden those costs are up at the $50,000 mark, which they easily could be, in certain files, then of course the law firm judgment in the file can be compromised because the law firm has, quote, invested in the litigation or in the file. And so the rules of professional conduct that we lawyers are obligated to live by are pretty clear that a law firm should not invest in a file and be involved in the cost of the file.
That makes sense. So the client ends up paying for that expert witness if that's the cost of that part of the litigation.
Right. Very
right at some point in
very
time.
Distinguishable from the time and the effort on the legal work in the file. Okay, in order to give the client an opinion, you know, I have this going on in a file right now in order to give this family multiple members of the same family on very valuable piece of property, but they need a survey prepared. The survey is going to cost them, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000. But we must have that in order for me to then be able to put their file together in the proper manner and do the legal work. So, yes, I'm going to be charging an attorney fee for the legal work, but they must pay the cost of the surveyor.
That makes sense. Let's take our final break here. When we come back, if we can answer this question quickly in the time remaining, how, in what circumstances are attorney fees returned to the client, if that's ever possible, to get your attorney fees back? Is that possible in North Carolina? We'll have that answer when we come back with Harvell and Collins. You can reach them at the firm today, 252-726-9050. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And either one of you gentlemen want to tackle that question I posed before the break as far as recovery of legal fees. When is it possible? Is it possible in North Carolina?
So in the litigation context, I oftentimes get the question, you know, can I recover my attorney's fees? And, you know, I had a call yesterday morning. First call I had after being out of the office for a little bit yesterday morning was from a client I'm representing as a defendant in a lawsuit, and he is having to defend himself. He's been sued based on some things with regard to the sale of a piece of property. So his question, his very common question is, well, can I get, you know, some of my attorney's fees back? You know, I didn't do anything. Well, you've been sued, though, so we're having to defend you. And the answer to the question in general, right from the beginning, is that typically in litigation, you do not get your attorney's fees back. It's at the discretion of the court, but the judge normally is not going to allow attorney's fees unless you have a contract in place that indicates you're entitled to recovery of attorney's fees if you prevail, or if there's a statute on point. Now, in this particular case, for this gentleman who called me, my opinion with regard to the case is that the plaintiff has brought a case that is not well grounded under North Carolina law. And it's very, very easy to see that. Mm-hmm. And I think that this plaintiff's attorney should know that. So what I do is I write a letter to the attorney citing the cases, saying this is why you shouldn't have brought this, and indicate that it's our intent to seek recovery of our attorney's fees as your claims are what we call non-justiciable. You should not have brought them. I'm putting you on notice. And that kind of sets the stage for us to go to the Superior Court at the end of the case when we prevail, and I think likely that we would here. I think we have a minute to go. And then the court would then look at the fact that I put opposing counsel on notice. You shouldn't have brought this. We've had to spend this money. And under the statute, North Carolina General Statute is 6-21.5, then the court can say this claim was non-justiciable, shouldn't have brought it. You got to pay the attorney's fees.
Is that a frivolous lawsuit? Is that the same?
Basically, non-justiciable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can talk a little bit more about that next week. Along the lines of Florence as well, because we do need to talk about those claims
because they're
getting close and folks need to know about that.
Very good. If you want to reach Harvell and Collins, now's the time to do it. You can go two ways. Go online to harvellandcollins.com or call the firm today in Moorhead City, 252-726-9050. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Mike.